Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And like always, I have a question for you. Do you think it's a bad thing that the rich get richer while the poor get poorer? What if I were to suggest that income discrepancy is not economic nor social injustice, but God's very design for the world? In today's broadcast, we are going to examine the difference between people whose economic condition is empowered by abundance versus those fueled by scarcity. Join me now as we visit two extremely severe parables about the economics of God's kingdom, which, by the way, is in the midst of all of us. We'll learn why fairness is not equal opportunity, and why that means there can be so little tolerance for the unproductive. Hello, everybody, and thanks so much for tuning in to episode number 161 of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Winder. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach. I'm so glad to have you here. Thanks for tuning into this broadcast, and welcome to Sunday. Folks, I am going to rattle a few feathers today. I can only imagine. A lot of the times, my conservative audience is the one half of my audience that gets the torture, I should say. I don't know. I'm always picking off scabs on both sides of the fence, and so often it's the conservative folks who feel that they are getting an unfair kind of picking on. Well, today, my more liberal side, those who are really wrapped around issues of social injustice, are probably going to push back with me on this one. But I think if you can hear it, if you'll give yourself to the process of listening, something truly amazing can emerge. We deal in a world where there is income discrepancy. We deal in a world where people of wealth are accumulating wealth faster and faster, while people who are struggling to get by find it harder and harder to get by. And we like to blame the rich for that. We like to blame the corruption and the system for that. Some of that is certainly the case, but that is not entirely the case. And as you listened to my intro, you realize that I'm going to suggest that this is actually the very design of the world, that there is a flywheel principle that God has instituted. And he says, to those who have, I'll give more. To those who do not have, for even what they do have, I will take away. And this is part of the building blocks of a very beautiful, amazing kingdom that we're seeing unfold before our very lives, and a lot of us just call unfair. And it becomes the political landscape that we live in. Now, regardless of what side of the fence you live on, I hope that today I can shed some light and some wisdom from Scripture, because this is a teaching that Jesus taught specifically about this issue. So, without any further ado, let's get started. Today's topic is called Engage in Business. Engage in business. And let's just face it, the wealthy, the middle, the poor classes will always exist. They always have, right? We've always had the upper crust. We've had the kings and the serfs, and then those in between, right? And we all fall into one of these groups. There's really four groups that I'm going to list out. And they are basically those who excel in the marketplace. Those are those who manage to get by, some barely, but they manage to get by in the marketplace. And then there's those who cannot compete in the marketplace. And then there's those who won't compete in the marketplace. Okay, so there's four different groups. And I'm just going to break these down a little bit at a time. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to prove that the reason the rich get richer and the poor get poorer is actually not economic injustice. It is indeed God's design for the world. Poverty is the result of a truth problem in either our personal apprehension or application of the truth, right? So yes, I know that this hurts, but I am placing some blame on each of us, right? Our economic progress has mostly to do with us in a lot of the ways. Now, I know that it rubs severely, especially if you take into consideration that not all countries have the same economic opportunities. Not all states in the U.S. have the same economic opportunities. Families come from different things. I get all of that. That's very, very true. But you see, the goal can't be to just make everything equal among us all. And I think that is why we struggle so much with things and call it unfair. And that's exactly what we see in the parable that we're going to look at today. Okay, poverty is the result of a truth problem. It's either our inability to understand the truth about how God's kingdom works, about how the world and economics works, which is all the same thing, or it's a failure of our ability to apply the truth that we actually know about it. So if you know that a higher education and technical skills will give you more opportunities, but you fail to go after that, then that's your failure of application, right? See, there's more than enough to go around in our world. The rich are not taking it all. That's my presupposition. Well, it seems like, gosh, the rich are taking it all. Well, that comes from an idea of scarcity, saying that there's only so much piece of the pie that's here. And if the rich take the greater pieces of pie, there's not enough pie for the rest of us. That is a scarcity mentality, and that leads to great poverty. Okay? The rich don't think that way at all. They're not thinking, oh, there's only so much pie, I need to get more pie. No, they're looking at the world in a tremendous sense of abundance, saying there's just so much out there, let's just open myself up and learn how to go get it, and they apply skill, and therefore the flywheel expands for them. See, I think this is a fundamental principle, and it's not really based on either one side of the aisle or the other. We just tend to land on one side or the other depending on the choices we've made. We don't really want to look at our own application or understanding of the truth. Okay, so let's look at these four groups that I talked about. Okay, now that I've offended half of you, maybe even all of you, gosh, it's a good thing I don't have a core base I have to, you know, keep happy. It's okay, I don't get hurt at all if you unsubscribe, so no damage done. Okay, but hopefully you'll stick around and hear the truth, even though it is uncomfortable at times. Now, we all know that there are those in the market that just cannot compete, right? We're talking about those who have a loss of ability. They have a physical disability, which means they cannot perform certain functions, right? You do not have blind bus drivers for a reason, because bus drivers need to have vision, okay? You may have a cognitive impairment, right? You may not be emotionally or mentally intelligent enough to complete certain tasks in the marketplace. You may not be employable depending on certain, you know, mental abilities and stuff. You might be too young. You know, we don't have 3-year-olds running businesses. We don't have, you know, 99-year-olds doing the same, right? There are certain age limitations that come into play. That doesn't mean that you can't work, that you're not valuable. No. It's just saying that there are certain things that happen that take away our ability to be in the marketplace, to compete in the marketplace, right? You could have a disease, right? Cancer takes you out. You could get something that, you know, an injury or something that really takes you out of the game. Okay, these are all things that we don't control. These are all things that take out our loss of ability. And we're not capable of achieving the tasks required for work and production. And these are the most vulnerable people in our society. And they are a group for which all voters and all citizens, we all unanimously agree. These are the people who should receive resources from the community as well as the government. Okay, nobody argues that. We need to take care of our elderly. We need to take care of the sick, the diseased, right? The mentally ill. We need to do this, okay? I'm not talking about those, because there are those who can compete in the workplace, but are at a disadvantage in the modern world, either due to racism, sexism, educational and IQ disparity. I mean, not all people are equally smart. There are people who come from different cultural, geographical backgrounds. There's certain obstacles. There's people who have varying levels of education and understanding. It doesn't mean they can't compete, but they can. Now, while they may engage in business for certain resources, a lot of people in these classes who can compete but can't compete at a high level have discovered that they can gain more resources from the government than they can by the means of their own production. And they use this disadvantage as an excuse not to produce, not to put themselves out there. And voters disagree sharply over this group, right? the conservative people say these people need to be out having jobs, getting jobs and paying taxes. And there's a lot of on the liberal side that say, no, these are people, they also fall into the category of can't really compete. Because even though they can go out and get a job, it's not a job that's good enough, like some of the high executives or the more intelligent people are able to compete and apprehend. Therefore, they need to receive more government assistance. You see, that's the group that is mostly argued about in our politics, right? It's those who can compete, but don't. Right now, that is the group we're going to come back to in this parable that is really severely treated. And of course they are. It's severe from both sides. Okay. Now, the next level or the next group are those who excel, have a very different worldview to everybody else's, right? These ones have kind of figured something out. They were either taught it by their family. They were given opportunity, and when I mean opportunity, I mean they were given this worldview to understand how things work. They were taught it in school. They got it. Friends, family, somebody helped them. They gave them a push somewhere, and they learned it, and then they began to apply it, right? And since they can produce more resources in a free market than the government can provide them, they view the government as an inhibitor rather than a benefactor, and then they vote accordingly, right? These are the folks that vote against government, against taxes, against regulation. Why? Because they can do far better on their own than they can with the help of a government. You see, and their success is not guaranteed, right? You have people who know the same things that they do that don't produce what they produce and gain what they produce. So they have to leverage any advantage that they do possess to remain valuable in the marketplace. This is why I say it's always a truth problem. It's about application and apprehension. What do you know and what do you do? And so if you're not living, like T. Harv Eker says, at the level of economic level that you want to be, it's something you don't know or won't do. And I think he's absolutely right. This is a truth problem. And the people who excel know something that we don't, and they do things that we don't. That's the truth. And for all people, races, wealth, community, education, IQ, and health, these all aid in spinning the flywheel of production. I get that, right? There are certain people who just have more going for them in a certain market than others. And the more advantages one has, the faster and more they are able to produce and thus earn. And that's true. You might start at a much higher level than somebody who's an immigrant and doesn't speak the language and doesn't have the skill and doesn't have an education, right? You're going to start miles and miles and miles ahead if you grew up in this environment. And so production, however, is linked to citizenship. Now, a lot of people want to fight this reality. They just want to say you're a citizen because you're a person, and that's true. But we're part of a society, and our production is linked to a citizen. It's not the basis, right? Our citizenship is not based upon our production, but it is linked to our production. You see, each citizen brings value to the whole society. At the same time, society places a value on what each citizen brings. So if you want a better exchange, you bring more value to the society, and then the society gives you a greater value. So you are absolutely linked. Your citizenship and production is linked. It's a bi-directional responsibility. As you bring more value to the society values what you bring in a greater detail. And that's part of what I think God has just built into the world. And you see it in every single government across the world. See, Jesus uses these three classes to teach a very valuable lesson about citizenship in God's larger kingdom, namely that production is linked to citizenship, right? Like I said before, it's not the basis, but it's linked. And there is a profound spirituality to production. And man, I've really shared a lot with folks who spend a lot of time in the contemplative space, really looking at kind of the internal spiritual reality and trying to pull back from production, trying to detach from all these things. And I get that. There's a value in that. But folks, there is a spiritual value in production, in accomplishment, in speed, in gaining, right? There is a spirituality to all of that. And too often we hear about how struggle and poverty are the gateway to spiritual awakening. And I think that it is true. But if this awakening doesn't move us into production for the sake of other people, then the seed has died within us. What good is your awakening if it begins and ends with you? If it doesn't turn you into somebody who does something for someone else, your awakening has no real value in the world, right? As a citizen, there's no production that your spirituality is producing. Now, I know this sounds severe. I sound probably like a jerk to some of you. Stay tuned in, please. Keep listening. You see, in our world, wealth generators and earners are kind of vilified. People who make money are seen as the bad guys, and they're seen as having lost their spiritual depth. But I can prove that their success is really only possible because of a spiritual awakening that they possess. It's not just luck, and it's not just corruption that brings people into great periods of wealth. No. That is mostly the result of knowing something of the truth and applying it. Now, Luke 19, verses 11 through 27, and Matthew 25, verses 11 through 30, they each tell a very similar story of the categories of these citizens, right? Those who can produce, those who won't produce, those who cannot produce, and those who really produce. And it's really important, but the disposition, right, of the production is vital. It is not the amount of production that is the issue. And this is where I think in America we just get all wrapped around the axle. We start saying, well, that guy produces more and earns more, and he's more valuable than me. And that's not true, right? A rich person is no more valuable than a poor person. Not at all. And Jesus affirms this by letting us know and showing us that the amount of production is not important, but it's the disposition within the heart of those who are producing that is absolutely vital, right? The one person who got the talent gained 10 more, the other gained 5, and they were both blessed equally, right? One got 10 kingdoms, one got 5 kingdoms. They're blessed equally. They got blessed equally according to their production. So the category that did nothing, the ones that could produce but chose not to, the ones that wanted the, you know, they despised the king for making them work, like it says in Luke 19:14. They didn't want to think that it was fair, right? They were the ones that said, but, you know, when they took the money from the guy who has one talent and they said, give it to the guy who has 10. They said, that's not fair. He has 10. Why would you take from the one and give to the guy who has the most, right? These are the ones in verse 25 that just didn't think life was fair. And they, you know, they had so much more wealth than they did. That's just not right. You shouldn't do that. They didn't think this kingdom was fair. They didn't want this king to rule over them. These are the ones who could produce but chose not to. Their disposition was the one that was exposed. And that's the disposition that I want to expose today. And that disposition lurks deep within many of our minds and our attitudes. In Luke's account, everyone got the same amount to invest. In Matthew's version, each received an amount to invest according to their ability. But the point is that everybody got something to invest. See, everybody gets a life. No, not all lives are equal. Not all ability is equal. But everybody gets a life, and everybody is responsible for investing. And it's the one who says, well, rather than invest, I'm just going to plunder for the resources of my government. You see, in both accounts of Matthew and Luke, the unproductive citizen, right, the one who could work but didn't really, he just put all the resources in a hole and buried it. The unproductive citizen reveals a spiritual framework of fear and apathy and scarcity, right? And this cannot be understated. This is the biggest difference between the groups of haves and have-nots. Fear and apathy are a spiritual disposition that diminishes one's capacity to even try. Thus, those people that don't even try, they're blind, always blind to the opportunities that are before them, and they become dependent on a state, right? They just say, oh, there, I never get a chance, and they start blaming everybody else for taking their chances. Well, the reality is they didn't take their chances. they took the chances that they were blind to. It's not like it's not the responsibility of the state to say, here's some chances. You see, the reason they're blind to the chances is the disposition of the heart. And the Bible is very clear about caring for the widow. We're supposed to care for the widow, the orphan, the refugee, the poor. There's no doubt in my mind that we are not to forsake the most marginalized in our society. We are to care for them and to be generous to them. That never changes. And while these are often the most vulnerable of our society, these marginalized status does not mean they can't produce in the marketplace or kingdom. So yes, they still have a responsibility to invest what they can, to give back somehow, however they can. But these parables of Jesus illuminate that those of us who excuse or diminish our responsibility to produce are not only diminishing our own humanity, but we show hatred for the King. Think about that. When you want to take from the government, because it's too hard to compete. It's too much work to go get an education. It's too much work to get the training and the skills you need. It's too hard to fight all the competition that's out there. I just don't have it. I just can't get there. Yes, it's hard. It's hard for everybody. But you want to just take, you're diminishing your own humanity and you're showing hatred for your King. That is why fair isn't fair, folks. This is why the flywheel principle exists. You see, the flywheel principle is a spiritual truth that's exposed here. And the flywheel principle is this, and it's found in verse 26. It says, those who have, more will be given. Those who have not, even what they have will be taken away. Now, this seems severe. It seems unfair, even cold. But it's a spiritual truth that if we grasp, then all who join this spirituality will join a spirituality of production. There is something to say about being productive. See, the kingdom depicted in Scripture is a place where equal effort is required. Equal return is not required. Did you hear me? Equal effort is required, but not equal return is required. Now I know I got you people are sitting there saying, well, that's not fair because I know people who have put out so much more effort and they can barely get by. And there's others who put out hardly any effort and they are just rolling in it. Why is that? Well, in one sense, you could take from Robert Kiyosaki and you could learn that one group of people, which is most of people, they work for money. They exchange their time for money and they think that they're going to earn themselves into a retirement. Now, the other group of people are the people whose money works for them. And they work differently. They think differently. They work on different principles. And until you work on those principles, you'll always be the person who's trying to earn your way ahead. And it'll never happen. You'll always be behind. But that's not the fault of the rich. The rich have simply learned how to turn their money and make it work for them. And the poor have never learned that. They always are working for money. Now, income disparity proves the rule. You see, we all start with the same spiritual support, but we all have different opportunities. Our gift to the world is to bring our creative impulse into production for the sake of others. And in return, we're going to grow what we started with. And it doesn't matter if a CEO makes 1,000 times more than me. What matters is that I engage in business, in other words, give my life away, until an account of that business is required. So I'm not here to keep score. It doesn't matter that somebody is making way more than me or way less than me. I don't compare myself. I don't see somebody who makes less as less than me, and I don't see somebody who makes more as someone who's more than me. Just different people who have been given different states, different allots according to their ability or according to the opportunities that they have capitalized. And all that's required is that we have equal effort of giving our life away for the sake of others. And for those who hate this system, you have every reason to fear. This is a very serious, I mean, in Luke 19:27, he brings the servant in front of him and all the people who didn't want this king, and he has them slaughtered in front of the king. In Matthew, he slaughters the person who did not produce. So what we can take from this is that those who don't want this kind of kingdom to rule over them, those who push back hardest against the flywheel principle, you're engaged, whether you realize it or not, in some form of self-slaughter. You see, your economic despair is the first indication that your soul, your disposition toward production is out of tune. Did you hear me? Economic despair is an indication that our soul is out of tune. It's a truth problem. We're rejecting the truth. See, protesting this, protesting the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer, is not going to dislodge this fundamental reality. It's a principle, it's a framework upon which God has made the world. And so it's not that you don't miss out on that. It's that you can get your own flywheel spinning too. And as you do, you discover something about the work of God in your life. That's the whole point. The whole point is that your life is valuable. Your story is integral to the vitality of all of our cities. Everybody, we need all of you. Right? We are all required to know ourselves, to find our gift, and to give it away for the sake of others. Anything less, and we are not a citizen. We are a plunderer of the citizenship. Now, I know these sound like harsh words, and I get it. But folks, these words are not as harsh as a severe economic struggle. But I can tell you this, we seem to embrace either one or the other. We will either embrace these harsh words and let them change our soul. We will embrace the flywheel principle and begin to serve and give our life away. And watch it accelerate. Watch what we give, watch what we invest, bring back a return. And as it does, we gain momentum, we gain blessing, we gain freedoms, we gain economic liberty. Now we can embrace that, right? Or we can embrace the economic struggle. We seem to embrace one or the other.